November 8, 1986. Student field trip to Mattapani and Pamunkey reservations. This tape is of Chief William Miles meeting my students at the Pamunkey Museum.
You want me to, they want to ask questions, do you?
Why don't you start off with a general statement of the conditions here on the reservation, how many people, and they can take it from there with questions.
We have about 1,200 acres here, and about 500 of it is tillable. Most of it is swamp, and we're practically surrounded by water. When I was a child, we used to have to ford a stream. I don't know if you noticed the green water when you came in. You used to have to drive. That used to be just a little creek about running so deep, and we used to have to drive through that when I was a child and we wanted to get off the reservation. So unless you are a good swimmer, you go out the way you came in, because there's no other way in or out. We have varied, our population varies from 60 to 80. Am I talking loud enough? People come and go. They come down and stay maybe a couple of years. And we've had two families that had 10 members in each family, and they both left here within the last year or two. They come down, and things aren't maybe what they thought they were, or they don't like the atmosphere or whatever. They come and go. Most everybody here, like myself, I'm retired. My last job was in the Post Office Department. I was postmaster in New Jersey. Before that, I was a tool and die maker. I lived in Jersey. I left here about 1924, and I retired in 1976 and moved back here in 1977. Everybody here mostly has a garden, but nobody does anything for them. We rent all of our ground out to a big farmer in the area. They pay so much in acres. And whoever the ground has been assigned to, they're the ones that collect the rent on X number of acres, whatever it is. Now, I only took a little place, so I don't rent any ground. I just have it. I have a little more than I use, and the fellow that's farming in here, he plows my garden for using a couple acres of my ground, so I don't have to worry about getting a plow. In the spring, we shad fish and herring fish. And later on in the winter, some of the men, two or three of the men, are still trapping. And they catch muskrats, beaver, raccoon, maybe an otter once in a while. Not too many maybe an otter, but they do real good on muskrats and raccoons, bigger animals. I guess you all know the story of Dr. Rountree. You know the story of Pocahontas and John Smith, how she saved his life. I don't have to go over that.
The church is a Baptist one, right?
The Baptist Church was established in 1865. And before that, the Pamunkey Indians went to the Colossi Baptist Church out on 30. Probably didn't pass it.
No, we didn't pass
came,
it.
You came in before on Polo Road.
And chiefs are elected?
Chiefs.
I haven't told them anything about how
the government goes.
No, they're coming in cold.
The chief and council are elected at the same time as national elections every 40 years. Only the officers, newly elected officers, take office on the 1st of December instead of waiting until January. We have a unique way of holding our elections. All the male members of the tribe that have lived on the reservation for at least 6 months are eligible to vote. And we, as names are called off, each man is given a grain of corn and a bean. And the grain of corn elects and the bean rejects. And usually there has been no competition for running for chief. I was voting for Rand 2 years ago. And before that, the man had been chief for 42 years, and he was 85 years old, and decided that he had had enough. And that's Mr. Dora Brett, whose brother had been chief for 42 years. He was getting hard of hearing, and he decided he had enough. And the councilmen, the ones that get the most grains of corn, we have either five or seven councilmen. The one that gets the most grains of corn are elected council for 4 years.
The woman does well?
No. I thought I hear some noise about that. I usually do.
Is that just like what tradition? Or
that's as long as I've known about it. It's a tradition. And at way, way back in history books, will tell you that the chief usually came from the maternal side of the family. But I don't know when this was stopped or when it was changed. You know, when the women had nothing to say.
How many
on
the council?
Seven. Either five or seven. We have seven right now. Sometimes we can't get seven men that are willing to. It takes a little time to be chief and councilman. The things that have to be taken care of. Some of the men work together, and they just don't have the time to devote to the duties of the councilman.
And there are written laws for the reservation.
Oh, yeah, there are written laws that well, they cover several different things here. We don't have, some of the laws are not applicable anymore, like if you had animals and they were bothering somebody else, you would have to keep them up. Like if I was to die, my wife is white. She could stay here as long as she didn't marry another white man. If she married an Indian, she could stay here indefinitely. But if, when I die, if she doesn't remarry, she can stay here till she dies. And the same thing if I had an unmarried daughter, she could move here. My sons can move here. One son does live here. The other son is a minister in New York State, and I don't think he's ready to.
And the sons can bring non-Indian wives, but
oh, yeah.
The wives cannot bring non-Indian husbands.
Right. And this came to a vote since I've been here. And it, you know, to give the women the vote, and it roundly defeated. I mean,
roundly defeated by the men on council.
Yeah.
Well, like the Iroquois, you said something about you don't know when. Women stopped having power, or not power, but yeah, say so. The Iroquois had a system where the women were pretty much behind the picking, the selection. Mm-hmm. Would that be similar to what it used to be like?
The women have no say in the picking or selecting.
Well, what they used to do. You said they used to have a little more.
Oh, the chief more. Came from the mother's side of the family at one point.
Okay.
It was hereditary here. Yeah, the Iroquois was not hereditary,
right.
It was elected. But in Virginia, it was hereditary, but through the mother's line.
And I don't know when that was changed, or maybe you did.
Somewhere in the 18th century, the documents are lacking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last queen of Pamunkey died somewhere in the early 1700s.
Yeah, anyone have any more questions?
Yeah.
Well, I. Actually, I have to answer most of the mail that comes, and we do have a clerk, but I find better to do these things myself. I conduct the meetings. If there's any dispute between maybe two families, we try to settle them ourselves. And if any big thing occurred, we have no police department or authority. So we call in either the state police or the county sheriff, or something like that, if we had need to. But we haven't had to in the 10 years I've been back.
And you get interviewed for television?
Oh yeah, I get interviewed. Mm-hmm. We take the deer up to the governor, and there's is it Newport News or
Newport News Cable?
Yeah,
it's Newport News.
That's where Forrest is from.
Yeah,
she was up here last week. She'd been up here a couple of months before, but. They had so much trouble with their equipment, I don't think it took too good, so she came back last week and did it all over again. And I don't know when she's going to be on cable television sometime soon.
Was the equipment working this time?
Oh, yeah.
I'll keep that in mind.
The only trouble we had is they wanted to interview me outside.
Uh-huh.
And the camera, I mean, the microphone kept picking up the wind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
that's
we finally wound up behind the building here. We got out of the wind a little bit.
But you didn't have to shout this time as I did for them?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
And she's supposed to send us up a VCR to fit in here and, you know, the whole tape. And they also took pictures and talked to the women making the pottery. And they just explained how they dug the clay out of the river. You get the clay right out of our river. And how they process the clay and get it.
Are they doing that now? Can we check that out?
Oh, I don't think there's anybody working in the pottery today. Not on Saturday. I'm going to answer more, but I'm positive nobody is doing anything down here. I didn't see any cars there either when I came.
No, I didn't either.
I don't think anybody's. They usually do that 5 days a week. And then when it gets real cold, they have enough things made up that they don't do much in the wintertime. Even unless they have a mild day. Because the building isn't the greatest. There's a little white building down in the back.
Oh.
It's not in this building.
Yeah.
Because working with the clay is a little bit messy. And they wouldn't dare bring it in here.
We've been over at Mattapani and talked with Curtis Costello, and he's mentioned a little bit of what NARF does in a general way, but he didn't cover the land case for the railroad. He only mentioned it in passing. Can you tell them a bit more about that?
Yeah.
Because you've been here while it went on.
Yeah, I was here, well, after it started, but I was here at the finish of it anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know, remember now, I would say now it's about 120 years ago that the railroad went through the reservation. And they had never got permission from the tribe. And so we sued them for crossing the reservation property without going through the proper procedures, and we settled we settled with NARF without going to court for $100,000, and that money was invested, and some of it was distributed amongst the members living on the reservation at the time of the distribution. And right now we have the 25th, I have to meet two surveyors and one of the NARF lawyers. We're trying to get our boundary lines established on a map. You know, it's all been worded out for how many years that this is Indian property, but every once in a while a little piece somebody else claims. So we've got two or three pieces like this now that we're going to try to get put back in Indian hands, and then have an official map made and have the courts declare that this is Indian ground. And nobody, the treaty says that the ground is sold, it has to go through the assembly, but there's no records of anything ever going through the assembly. And I guess we had over 5,000 acres back in 1646, and more than that when they, no, I'm sorry, 1677 is when we made our treaty with Virginia. 1646, we had more ground than that with the treaty with England, but it's all gone, you know, been. People just moved in and overpowered the Indians, and that's where we wound up right here.
About how many acres do you have now?
About 1,200. And overhead, but it's swamp. It isn't usable for anything except hunting and trapping.
What year was the case that you had in 79?
79, I think. Mm-hmm. About then.
79 or 80, I forget which myself.
Somewhere right there. Because I'd only been here a couple of years and it had already been started.
Yeah, it started it in 75, I remember.
Yeah. Any more questions? Somebody must have some more questions.
Come on, gang, you got to have lots of them.
Do you have your own school, sir?
Pardon?
Do you have your own
school? No. When I lived here as a child, this little building out here that's decorated up used to be the one-room schoolhouse. And it was just 8 grades or whatever available. And I think around 1960 or late 1950s, this school was closed and the children went to Mattapani School for a couple of years. And then now they all get bussed out to the county school.
And how many children are there that are getting bussed?
Here now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
About four or five.
Four or five.
Oh, wow.
Mostly retired folks here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mostly, you know, like myself, are all retired. Mm-hmm. My children are, my oldest boy is 40 years old, 42, something like that. You know, both of them, their children are away from home. And like I, when I quit working, I decided I'd move back here. My wife was agreeable, so we are.
Have you paid the tribute already this year?
No. We're going to have our hunt on the 17th. Hmm. It's the first day of deer season, and that's when we usually get them up here.
First day you get them?
Usually the first day.
Do you hunt right here on the reservation,
oh, yeah,
or can you go elsewhere?
Oh, yeah, we don't go off the reservation. Yeah. And my son told me he's seen big buck come out along the side of my barn out in the bean field the other day, so we'll be looking for him.
Is there a set day that you take that tribute? Is there a set date that you go to the
no,
governor?
No, we have to call the governor and see when he's available. And it's usually the 25th, I think, is Monday. And it usually means that we have a place to store them for a couple of days, so we don't have anything for long term.
What do they do with the deer?
Pardon?
What does the state do with the deer once they get it?
The state gives it to a children's home in Richmond. Oh. And I suppose just, you know, what would the governor do with deer?
Do you guys go the same date as the man?
We usually don't do it the same day. We usually do it different days. And one year, since I've been back here, we couldn't get a deer, couldn't get a buck deer. And we took up some geese and ducks, some of the dogs that got out of the blinds. And also, the blinds in September are rented out to members of the tribe. And they bid on these. Some of these duck blinds go to $400 or $500 a piece for this year's season. And then they, in turn, rent it out to people by the day. And I think they, you know, really make out pretty good because they get $75 a day for people coming down here to duck hunt or goose hunt.
What about the deer? Somebody get the, I mean, is it just whoever shoots it or?
Oh, yeah, nobody special shoots the deer. And we don't have dogs. We only have one hound dog on the reservation now. We had two yesterday, only one today. We get a group of people comes in and with their dogs, and they bring about 15 to 20 dogs. And we start out in the swamps and try to drive the deer out of the swamps. And people can't, most places in the swamp, you can't walk in there even with your boots on because you just go right down out of sight. Especially if the tide is up there.
Is that why you're
Yeah. No, I don't know. Nobody just raises the dogs anymore.
She's wondering what happened to that second hound dog you had yesterday.
Yeah, somebody gave him. They found out who it belonged to, and they came and got him yesterday. It was a stray dog that came in.
Oh.
Or somebody had been training him. You know,
they don't find their way home.
Yeah. I don't think they rent every day in the hunting season, but like probably on maybe people have jobs. We have one man here, I know that he doesn't work on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. He puts in his week's work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And he usually takes people out, and some people can know the river well enough to hunt by themselves, and they rent a blind maybe, but this fellow will take people that don't know how to hunt and act as guides. And in the springtime, we shed and herring fish. Our nets are 500 to 600 feet long and 25 to 30 feet deep. And you make out pretty good.
Do you all get
this? Huh? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I just delivered my last 50 last week.
Not of the deep freeze or from the river?
No, from the deep freeze.
No
shed in it. No
I
shed.
I didn't think so.
Not now. It starts about the middle of March up until maybe the first week in May. But most of us don't fish, say, the last week in April and into May, because then you're getting the trash and destroying the garbage and German carp that come up out of the mud, and they can raise hot with your nets. German carp will put a hole that's big in your net, and the garfish, I don't know if you're familiar with the garfish, with a long bill, and they get, you know, it takes you 15, 20 minutes to get a garfish out of your net, because he's got half the net in his mouth, you know, there's so many teeth that they're just hard to get out.
Do most of the men on the reservation still do this shad fishing each year?
I would say there's maybe six or seven boats that go out from the reservation.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't think the really old fellows would still do it, but
I
was wondering about...
I'm an old fellow.
Oh, you don't qualify yet. You've got to be over 80.
Oh. Well, I got a little time to go.
You're not there yet.
No, I've got a little time to go, but I still go with most every day. It's according to the weather. If the weather is bad, I stay home. I don't have to fish. You know, I fish because I like it and enjoy it.
You just do it singly? I mean, just one person's... I'm not familiar with
it. No, you make out much better if you have an oarsman, somebody to row the boat while you're putting the net out. And the net has to be put out, and we fish for like what we call it, the tides. When it's high, low water, we'll fish the tide with the water going out. And with high water, we go to the spot we call, fish what we call reaches. And every time the river makes a bend, there's a reach, because your nets won't go around, very seldom go around the bend. They usually go ashore, and then you've got all the leaves and sticks, you know. So we try not to let the nets go around the bend. And we fish a reach, and we try to get our nets, to put our nets in the water we start from. And when it reaches that bend, the nets wants to be stopped. And that's when the net is fishing deeper. There's no weights on the net. It just hangs right straight down when the tide stops. And that's when you catch most of your fish. If there's not a lot of people on the river fishing any particular day, you can, my son probably looking for me. He'll find me. If there's not a lot of people, you don't have to start at the beginning of a reach. You can go halfway down, maybe if you got another, it takes about an hour and a half to run through a reach. And the tide is, if you got it figured right, if you stop in an hour and a half. And there's shorter reaches and longer reaches. Most of the, like I pick usually one or two spots where I fish. Other people pick different spots.
What kind of boats are used?
Just rowboats. I got
rowboats.
A 14-foot aluminum boat. Mm-hmm. Now, the old timers used to fish with wooden boats. And I can understand why a wooden boat would be better. They claim that you can control a wooden boat better because it's heavier. These aluminum boats, which are, if it's windy, your boat goes all over the river and you have, you know, a hard job controlling it. And especially if you're fishing alone, I put many net into the little motor. When you're fishing alone, you're running the motor slow and trying to put your net out. If the wind, gust of wind comes along and blows the net into the motor, you got to haul it.
Right. It seems to me that the roads here on the reservation were paved in 82 or 83, somewhere in there.
Yeah, after I came back, we got the roads paved. Well,
tell them what the difference is and who can come on the reservation and since the roads have been paved.
Well, anybody can come on the reservation. Mm-hmm. If as long as they behave themselves. Now, I had a man come in this morning and he wanted to know if he could go up in what they call a pocket. That was where we went across the river, thanks to people. Fish, and as long as we get people that get permission, they can come in and put a boat in the water and fish. And we have had trouble with several people. We went up there one day, and there was a man had his trailer out, and he had the wash line strung out. He was going to stay for the summer, I think. You know, as long as we tell them, as long as they clean up after themselves, they find beer cans and bottles, and that. And I check it two or three times a week, and other people do too. Mm-hmm. And if we find a mess there, and we find out who's been there, the next time they come to ask me, we tell them that.
When I first came here in the summer of 1970, the old chief told me that because the roads were not then paved, if the tribe decided it wanted to close off the reservation to outside traffic, it could.
Well, as I understand it, this was before, while I was off the reservation.
Yeah, you had to come back.
They used to have a gate right up there where the sign is.
Oh, I never saw the gate.
Yeah, and the kids used to go up there on weekends. That's when most of the people came in to the museum after the school was closed. The museum used to be in the old schoolhouse. And the kids would go up there, and when the car came in, they would open the gate, and they'd get the nickel or a dime or four for the open and closing the gate. You know, it's
not a bad racket.
But Bush used to tell me that. He said, he'd go up there every Sunday afternoon. And he said, he'd make a couple of dollars, let people in and out.
Yeah. But now if you have rowdies come in, and if they stay on the roads, can you still order them off, or do you have to call the state troopers?
We have to call the state troopers. We have no authority. You don't
that's what I was thinking. Yeah, just because it is state maintenance now. Mm-hmm. Have
and
you had to do that?
They maintain everything, and they keep the side roads, the edges of the roads cut back.
Yeah, right.
I think you can see now they were just in here a week or two ago. Mm-hmm.
But you don't get rowdies very often, do you, out here?
No, nobody. We've had no trouble with anybody since I've been here.
Far off the beaten track.
Yeah.
Far off the beaten track. On one entrance,
Well, several years ago, they did have a couple of boys that lived not too far off the reservation. We had a little trouble with them. But they've gone off. One of them is back now. But when one is by himself, he seems to be all right. But when the two or three of them got together, they were in trouble.
Keep thinking of things to ask, but they're supposed to be asking them.
Yeah.
I just thought of something else.
Go ahead.
You lazy bums.
Yeah, right. Later on.
Right. Do most of the people living on the reservation also have Indian names? I know the ladies in the pottery do.
Yeah, the ladies in the pottery do. Yeah. And they gave, when I came from the north, and we didn't lollygag them on the way. Had a job and you did it. So one of the women asked me to do something. And the next day I brought it back to her. She says, "Oh, you've done already." And I said, "Yeah, it's no big thing." She says, "Well, I'll have to call you Swift Diggle." She says, "We're getting things done right away." But I was raised different than I suppose the people here were. You know, there was life was easier here, like in Jersey. I worked in a machine shop for a number of years. And when the boss gave you the job, you had a time limit. If you couldn't make the time, they estimated a job that cost you so much to do. And if you couldn't make money on that job, you didn't last on the job. You would be on your way.
You were born in New Jersey?
No, I was born in New York. I'll tell you how I got that way. My daddy used to fish, shad fishing in the spring. They would start in Florida and work up the coast as the fish worked up the coast. And he got up as far as the Hudson River, and he got a job on a big estate up at Rhineland, you know, where the big people live, Roosevelt's and these people up there. And then he worked for the city of New York, in the park department, and that's where he met my mother. And I was born in Staten Island. One sister was born in Staten Island, and then we moved here, and I started school here. I just went to the one first grade here, and my daddy decided that he couldn't make a living here. He had this was horse and buggy times, maybe the first car. He'd have to raise his produce, take the horse and buggy to West Point and put it on a boat and ship it to Baltimore. By the time you paid the freight and the commission was, you had nothing left, you know. He decided that he wasn't going to stay. And that's what happens to people now for different reasons. They come and don't stay. And I guess we only stayed there maybe 3 years, and then we moved to Jersey. And we did the same thing in Jersey as he did here, only we had an old Model T truck then, and we take stuff to produce from where we lived in New Jersey, New York City, Newark, and list of the bigger cities. And what you call a huckster and a peddling now.
But you visited back here in the summers.
Oh, yeah, we came back in August, I guess. If anybody here is Baptist, you know how the Baptist church works. You have homecoming, you know, usually once a year, and here it's the third Sunday in August.
So, what, you're originally from this area? I mean, this nation? Or?
Oh, yeah, Pamunkey.
You are?
My daddy was.
That's what I couldn't figure out.
My daddy was a full blooded.
He was just working from Florida on up the coast, but he was originally.
Yeah, from here.
So everyone here is a Pamunkey or the parents, so
yeah.
You have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I can understand.
How do you deal with people who want to come back and reside on the reservation? And
well, right now, if somebody here don't remember your lineage, you got a problem. I don't know how they would do it, because the records that the county kept were destroyed. And come on, right on through this way, right on around here. Go around this way. Where was I?
Oh, the county records were destroyed.
Oh, the county records were destroyed. And the man that used to be clerk for years here, his house burned, and what records he had were burned. And now my wife does a little genealogy work. She's published a couple of books, and she is established back with using census records as far as my great-grandfather, my lineage. And she would like to do it for everybody on the reservation, but I don't know. This would be a pretty time-consuming job, and how many would be agreeable to this or not.
You're kind of shy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she'll ever get this thing off the ground or not, but she just started.
So suppose somebody applies to come back here and somebody does remember their lineage. What's the next step?
They have to be able to establish that they qualify. Our law says, and also the state treaty says, the same thing. And I guess this is why we have it in our laws, because the treaty says that you must be at least a quarter blood to reside on the reservation. So as far as my family goes, my sons will be the last of my line.
They are quarter-blooded?
Yeah, I'm half. My daddy was full-blooded Indian. But he married a white woman, so that makes me half. And I married a white woman, so that makes them quarter. Unless they, you know, change the assembly would agree to a change, in, which I doubt very much.
Well, there aren't any more racial definitions in Virginia. Mm-hmm. They repealed that law.
But what about women? Is that different again?
No. As long as you don't marry a white man, you can come back.
Okay, but so if you marry a white man and your children...
Yeah, your boys, you were a half-blood like I do, and you had boy children. They can come back. It's water blood.
But the daughters can come
back. Yeah,
the daughters can't come back. The boy.
And they tried it once here, and well, we had quite a time about that.
Mm-hmm. What happens, like, if you marry a white man and then the white man passes away and you want to come back and bring your children?
Oh, you don't come back. Oh,
you know,
yeah,
your children
you come
are all
back.
Minors and you want to bring them
yeah,
back.
That's all
do
right.
You kick them off the reservation again
when
they're
18.
18 or something?
When they're 18.
The women, the woman too, or just the kids?
No, just the kids. The boys, especially.
Not the girls.
No.
The girls are going to stay.
As long as they marry an Indian. It gets complicated.
Yeah. Yeah,
because we just ran into that. My son, that one of the fellows is here, he married a girl that had a 4-year-old son. And Billy raised his boy from the time he was 4. And when he moved back, the son was in the service. And then he got out of the service. And he came here and he stayed, oh, several months. And pretty soon I began to hear little things, you know, here and there, so we gave him the time limit that he had to leave. That's all. There was nothing else to do about it.
Yeah, yeah. But he was a stepson, not a regular son, so the rule kicked in.
How many here are full-blooded?
That'd be a hard guess. I would say 50-50, maybe.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Like Mrs. Bradley is full-blooded.
Both parents, Pamunkey.
Yeah. No. Daisy, I think, is full blooded.
Yeah.
Irma and Willis Palmer.
Yeah. Bernice, too.
Bernice, too, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say it's about 50.
So what happened to a half blooded Mary?
Pardon?
There's a half blooded.
Still half blooded if your both parents were half blooded?
Mm-hmm.
I would think so.
Yeah. If you do fractions, it comes out.
Well, these eight days, they're going to half and a half make one, you know.
Yeah, right. It doesn't quite work that way.
What if you use three
quarters? No. That's a little hard.
One and a half. It makes it feel
what happens
today. That's a little hard.
Perhaps if a tribe member marries another person from another Indian tribe.
I think that would be accepted. Now, we did have, a couple of years ago, when I first year I was chief, we had a man come in here, and he had a white woman with him. It was from out west someplace. And he was real adamant about it. He was going to pitch his tent out here in the corner where Daisy lived. I says, no, you're not. And Pete's cook happened to come along, and so I stopped him and I asked him, I said, what's your policy on, you know, this problem? And he says, they got no rights here. And he was going to pitch his tent out in that field.
This is a non-Pamunkey Indian community.
Yeah. I don't remember now where he was from, but he was from the west side.
Right. But what if a Pamunkey were to marry, we'll say, an Onondaga? We know what he did.
Yeah.
Okay, are their children considered to be, for all intents and purposes, full-blood Indians on this reservation?
Yeah. But he only has one boy.
Yeah, I know.
Girls.
I know. Well, and then the girls have got to watch out if they marry.
They got eight children. One is a boy.
So if a Pamunkey a Pamunkey woman marries an Onondaga man, then the boys are Pamunkeys and the girls are Onondagas or something?
No. This girl was married.
She's there.
This girl was married before to an Onondaga Indian. And then I don't know what happened, but she got divorced or whatever, and she married a Pamunkey Indian. And they had one child, who was a boy. But she has seven girls. And that's one of the families that's left. I mean,
So the girls, by the both Onondaga parents, don't have rights here anyway.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the son, who's half Pamunkey, half Onondaga, he can stay.
Well, that's
if he wants to come back.
Yeah. I don't think he would be have that much. He wouldn't be a quarter blood even.
Oh, really?
No. Because
Kevin
himself.
That's right.
Is a
his mother.
Blood.
Yeah, his mother's white and his grandmother too. That's right. Well, at that rate, there are going to be just a lot of promotions.
I know, I was going to say, the laws are going to die out.
Well, that's why we're trying to, get some genealogy and stuff.
It's getting further down to people who are just one quarter.
Mm-hmm. When it gets to one quarter, and I've had relatives that are the same as I am, half-blooded, and they also have relatives that are full-blooded. But they don't live here. They live in Richmond or somewhere else in Virginia. And there's over, I think now at the last census, there are over 9,000 Indians living in Virginia, not necessarily Pamunkeys, but 9,000 Indians.
Yeah.
And in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, there's a lot of Indians up there, a lot of Pamunkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know they just got a reservation in
Yeah, Powhatan Renape.
Huh?
Powhatan Renape, they call it.
And now there's another one, Algonquin Lenape, further south.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had a powwow this year. I had a paper on it. Whether they have a reservation, I never heard that.
Yeah.
Where in New Jersey did you
live? In the Central Park near Asbury Park.
Okay,
this would be
New Jersey.
Where about?
Westfield.
Oh, that's up in North Jersey. Mm-hmm. We lived within 15 miles of Asbury Park, Long Branch, in my life, just in from the shore.
About half the people here live in trailers. Can you tell them why? Is it specifically Indian reason for
that? When a piece of ground, like when I came, got ready to come down, I came down and I asked the chief, or asked the council and the chief for a piece of ground. And the next day, the chief took me around and showed me four or five pieces of ground that were available. And I chose the piece of ground where my trailer is now. But I never own the ground. I own the improvements on the ground. If I died and my wife decided to leave, she could sell the trailer and other buildings I have to another Indian, but she couldn't sell them. Or she could move the trailer off and the other buildings would have to stay.
Permanent.
That's why I put a trailer in the beginning. I wasn't too sure that my wife would like it here. We came from a small village, but there was a lot of traffic and a lot of people around. And I wasn't sure she would like to spend the rest of her life down here, but mm-hmm. she seems content.
She's a pretty sophisticated lady.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's sung under Toscanini, among other things. So this is very slow compared to working under him.
Yeah, she sang under many of the top, I don't remember them all now, but she could pile them up.
Yeah.
She went to Westminster Choir College in Princeton. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Is there a housing code on the reservation here as there is at Mattapani?
No. The only codes we have that are the water code and the septic mm-hmm. tank code. You must abide by the state regulation.
Yeah.
And we had to do that. Well, we did it when we got the grant, you know, to fix up some of the older houses that around that needed mm-hmm. attention. And some of them only had shallow wells and didn't have approved septic systems. They just had maybe a barrel or something around. And when that barrel filled up, they moved it a little further away. So we adopted with the grant money, we used it. Everybody that didn't have an approved septic system, we put one in. And then this building was built with HUD money and EDA money. It was completed in 1979. It was already started. The plans were already made before I got here, but it was well underway at the time I moved here.
Yeah. And during that tribe, during that time, the tribe was dealing with another anthropologist who was something of a character.
Oh, yeah.
They heard his name mentioned, some of them did, at Jamestown last week.
Mr. Callahan?
So, yeah, Eric Callahan.
Eric Callahan.
Say a word or three about him, what he was like.
Well, I met him here a couple of weeks ago up in Lynchburg when
did
I went to that parade. That's where he lives, evidently.
Yeah.
And I never knew that.
Sorry,
somebody said, hey, Miles, you know, and I turned around and here's Eric Callahan. He did the layout of this museum, and we had, for a while, we had an Indian village. And two summers, he brought down students from the class he was teaching at Catholic University in Washington. And, I didn't really dig Mr. Callahan. I mean, Callahan.
He's Mr. then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a doctor now.
He's a doctor now?
Yeah, he finished out in 81.
They lived right out in the woods. Boys and girls together, and it didn't seem to make any difference. One of the fellows that he had here with him introduced me one day to his wife. A couple of days later, I'd been around him, I don't know what, doing something, and he introduced me to his girlfriend.
It was a slice of the 1960s.
Yeah.
But done in the 1970s.
I guess it's to each his own, you know.
I don't think the folks on the reservation were quite ready for him.
No, they weren't quite ready for him.
No. Very conservative folks. But he got people interested and involved in that reconstructed village for a while, didn't he?
Yeah. But then after he left, we couldn't keep it maintained either, Chief Cook or I. We tried to, and we finally had it. It got such bad condition, maybe 2 years ago, we decided to do away with it because the fire company came up here and what was left we burned and turned it back into farmland. But we had two long houses and several other small things that he had engineered.
Similar to the one
in Jamestown. A bit similar, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was hoping to do the same kind of experimental archaeology that's being done at Jamestown. In fact, he applied for the Jamestown job 3 years ago. And went to somebody else.
And he also was involved, I don't know if he still is now, I didn't ask him, but I saw him a couple of weeks ago he was doing something when he started here up in Maryland for the Piscataway Indians. I don't know whether how far he got with that.
He had a project up at St. Mary's that didn't get finished. He has trouble getting enough funding for long enough to finish a project.
Yeah. Well,
but this wasn't HUD money that he was using on the village here, was it? It was just volunteer labor. Did the HUD money cover that village at all, or did it just cover this building?
I think I was allowed to, I did the finance work on it. Mm-hmm. I think he was allowed $10,000 mm-hmm. on the EDM money, more than HUD.
EDM?
EDA.
What is it?
Economic Development Administration. And HUD is housing. What's HUD? It was housing and.
Housing and urban development.
Yeah, urban development. Yeah.
How many batches of school kids do you get coming through here? What ages though?
I wouldn't want to guess. You'd have to ask the group of women because they know, but sometimes they have maybe 100, 150 children at one time. And they all have to be here then because, and they start them usually from the second grade on. Up to high school, the eighth graders and stuff like that. But they have a lot out of them. All schools seasonal.
At least they know where you all are now. Used not even to be decent signs.
Well, we had trouble with the signs. We had troubles when we first put this building up. We had the signs put up, and evidently the area children tore them down, and we've had them. Replaced some of them several times. I suppose this goes on no matter where you are.
Come on, people, think. All these educated folks.
They'll have a million questions they're going to ask you.
I know. I can just hear it coming.